Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome to Speed City with John Massengill, Bob Varsha, and Jonathan Green. It's the fastest hour on the radio. Speed City.
All right, gearheads, welcome to your Sunday night with Speed City. This is John Massengill. Joining me in the studio is my friend Jonathan Green. We're here in Austin, Texas. Tonight, as usual, we're going to talk a lot about Formula One and lots more motorsport. But straight off the top, we are thrilled to have our guest. We have Liam Lawson with us. Liam is a 21-year-old race driver from New Zealand, currently competing in Super Formula Championship. He's right at the top, currently second in the championship. He's also a reserve driver for the Red Bull Racing and Scuderia AlphaTauri Formula One teams. Last year, he finished third in Formula Two. He's previously a Toyota Racing Series. I see you.
Champion.
He was in DTM, lots more motorsport. Liam Lawson, welcome to Speed City.
Thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, he's also kicking ass in Japan, where he's 1 point off the lead, having won pretty much half the races. Liam, congratulations first and foremost. Saw you briefly in the winter, down under, as it were. But how are you enjoying your year and how are you getting on?
Been good. Yeah, it's been very, very good. A big adjustment going to Japan this year. Obviously, I've been doing the standard ladder system towards Formula One in the past 4 years, which was F4 to F3 to F2. So it's been a big change going to Japan this year, but it's been amazing. Like the step up, not just in the speed of the cars, obviously the cars are a lot faster than what I'm used to racing, but you're working with bigger teams, so a lot more engineers. The regulations are more open, so you've got teams developing stuff on their own. You've got Honda versus Toyota. So you've got like manufacturers against each other as well, which is very, very different to what I'm used to. So it's been really, really cool, a big learning curve.
And we sent our American champion, although he's British, Raoul Hyman, over to join you. Have you met him yet?
Yeah, we've been catching up each weekend. So I'll definitely be catching up with him in a couple of days when we fly to Motegi.
Now, Liam, we want to hear all about your career. We want to hear all about Red Bull. But I've got a question that I know every racing fan in the world wants to know, and they were given a lesson in it again today. But what are you Kiwis on? Van Gisbergen, do me a favour. Marcus Armstrong, do me a favour. The GOAT, Dixon, winning again yesterday. McIlroy, first win in Indy Lights. Lawson, win everything they throw at him. I mean, I don't even want to play cards with any of you lot. What are you eating? This modern era, forget the Denny and what's it show. those days are gone, but the new Kiwi, which I would say started back in Brendan Hartley's day, it just keeps on churning them out. What are you doing?
I don't know, to be honest. I think one of the advantages we have is being in a car so young. So for me, I was out of a go-kart and in a race car racing a Formula First car, which is, I guess, a step below Formula Ford. But it's still a race car. It's sort of obviously an open wheel, single seater, and you're wheel to wheel on a big scale circuit. And I was 13 years old when I was in this car, and I raced it at 13 years old. So whereas a lot of the guys I'm racing now, their first season in cars when they're 16, you know, and they jump straight into an F4 car. So for me, a lot of it comes from, I think, the early years of driving these cars with no downforce. Like Formula Fords have no downforce. You have a semi-slick tire, which in the rain has absolutely zero grip, and obviously you have no downforce at the same time. So you just have a really good feel for things. You have a car with three pedals, and you've got an H-pad and shifter, so you're a lot more connected with the car. And at a young age, I think that helps develop a lot, driving skills and I guess car control and things like that. But I also think that, I don't know, I think that maybe because we're so small and so far away, and the few of us that get, you know, are fortunate enough to get the opportunities to go overseas are generally, I guess, quite good. Whereas, you know, we're competing against quite a lot of British drivers, because it's a lot easier for British drivers or Europeans or even Americans to do that. So I think there's just less of us, and it makes us look a bit better, maybe.
Yeah, no, and I can, you know, having time in New Zealand as I have, I also think the community that you've got, which is small but very friendly. To give you an example, Shane van Gisbergen was watching every Toyota race that we did in the last season, and I'm sure even when he, you know, when you were racing, he was probably following it then. And that's the community that is racing. Earl Bamber hasn't forgotten where his roots were. He employs Callum Hedge, you know. Hedge, by the way, didn't even mention him. Oh, he's won every race in America so far, pretty much. So the list goes on and on. But it is a wonderful story, and I wish you all success, because you guys are kicking ass. Van Gisbergen, another Red Bull man there today, just having a ball. You've got to think that he's coming this way full-time, right?
Yeah, I'm not sure. In a way, I hope he does, to be honest. Yeah. I hope that he does do that, because he's mastered supercars, and he's completed that step for sure, and he's dominated that. And I think for someone of his level, he's completely capable of coming over and adapting. I mean, the guy can drive literally anything he wants.
Yeah.
So I think it'd be really cool for him, just for a lifestyle change as well, to be, I guess, based in the States. Obviously, I'm here right now, and I love this place. I think for him it could be quite a cool step. And I think from what I've seen, he's maybe not, you know, super, you know, enjoying so much supercars with the way, the direction that they've gone.
He was quite vociferous about it. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So I think for him, it might be a way for him to start really enjoying racing again, having a big shift. And I think racing in America looks... it looks super fun. Both IndyCar, NASCAR, they both look really, really cool and enjoyable for the drivers to be in.
Yeah. Hey, Liam, I want to ask you about the Nyck de Vries, AlphaTauri, Daniel Ricciardo situation. Your name was obviously thrown around quite a bit during that discussion. And, you know, it just seemed like a Red Bull brutal decision. And it's, you know, even F1 legend Sebastian Vettel has labeled Red Bull's decision to get rid of Nyck de Vries so quick as brutal. You know, what's your take on that whole situation? And you know, I know you're
in the best way you can answer.
Yeah, exactly. I know you're a Red Bull driver, reserve driver. So, but it just, you know, it was just such a whirlwind. And what's your take on that?
Yeah, I think that's, I guess, from the outside, it might look quite, an aggressive decision to do that. But obviously, you know, the teams have a lot more information than what we see on the outside. So they have a lot more insight into what's actually going on. I guess how the driver's feedback is, how what their actual speed is in all conditions. Mm. And I think that's, I don't know. I guess I can't really comment much on the decision to replace Nick. Mm. But for Daniel going in, I think with where the team's at the moment, they've been struggling quite a lot. I think that's quite clear. And I think that's, it was a much better option rather than having somebody, if I was to jump in now, it would be, you know, me, my debut in Formula One mid-season in a car that's,
yeah, that's nuts.
It's quite difficult to drive, it looks like, you know, and from what I've seen. And I think the decision was more to have somebody experienced come in and try and help the team be pushed forward again. And I think, logically, that was definitely Daniel to go in there. Obviously, I want to be in Formula One, but I want to have the best possible opportunity to do well as at the same time. And I think me completing Super Formula is what I would have wanted to do anyway, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. I was thinking, you know, if you got this, you never want to say no to Formula One, right? But in a way, are you sort of relieved in a way that you weren't thrown in right in the middle of the season like that? You do get to finish up in Super Formula. You're second place. You're 1 point off the lead. You've got a great spot right now.
Exactly that. Yeah, I think it's at the time, it's, you know, when the decision's first made, obviously I feel like I'm missing a shot at F1. And if they had decided to put me in the car, I'm going to take that opportunity, because I would take any opportunity I get to race in Formula One. But you're dead right. At the same time, I think it's a bit of relief, and I guess feels like the right decision to do this. I just hope that I still get that shot, you know, in the future.
Yeah. And Liam, I've got a question that I've been itching to ask you. I've seen you on the wall, and I know that, well, you tell us how many Grand Prix, but we see you a lot at the Grand Prix when you're not racing in Japan. But just being on the headphones and being part of the Red Bull team over the weekend, is Max the phenomenon we as journalists kind of, you know, purvey him as? The results show that. But he has got almost a Senna-like mystique about him, about the way he goes about it. You're there, you're listening, you're learning. It's the greatest position for any junior driver to be in. But are you amazed at his abilities, or is it just he's just very good?
No, it is very impressive, to be fair. It is very impressive to watch. He's in a situation where he's incredibly comfortable with the car. He's incredibly comfortable in the car that he's in. And he's very, very good, you know, because you think of how big the Formula One operation is. How much information they get from all different directions, and what they're trying to work out what is important to take and to work on, and what's not important. And Max seems to be very, very good at going, if they're focused on something and he goes, you know what, this is pointless, let's just do this, or something like that. He's very good at pinpointing exactly what needs to be worked on, and he won't waste time on something that's not sort of going to be beneficial. And I think he's able to work that out quite, and obviously then he's extremely fast, doesn't make mistakes. Yeah.
And what have they tasked you with? I mean, give us an insight. We don't know. We talk about Red Bull juniors and guys sitting on the wall, whether it be Djokovic or yourself. What is your task, or what have you learned, or what do you bring to the table? Do you do simulator work? What is your job, if you will, with Red Bull?
Yeah. So it's more the behind the scenes stuff. That actually is probably away from the track, back in Milton Keynes, a lot of simulator work. That's really where we actually, I guess, play a part. Not that it's a big part, but on the actual race weekends, it's obviously not super important for us to be there, I guess, because it's once free practice three starts, I can no longer drive the car anyway. So I think it's more, I guess, the stuff away from the track that we're actually playing a part in a little bit. But at the same time, at the track, I get a huge opportunity to just learn, you know, firsthand. And I think that's something that you can never underestimate how big the step is to Formula One. Like, it's so much more advanced. And I think it's why people going from F2 to F1 seem to struggle a lot. It's just you cannot be ready unless you actually work in that environment. Yeah, it's crazy. Not just the speed of the car, obviously, which is way, way faster, but the stuff that you're working on with the car, like the setup work, it's so much more advanced. Really, really fine margins, millimeter margins. And I think that's something that you just need to, for me, I've now had nearly 2 years of experience working, and I've learned so much that if I was to try and jump in Formula One 2 years ago, no way I would be ready for it.
Interesting.
Hey, Liam, I want to ask you about your path to Super Formula in Japan. I mean, it's a highly respected championship, got plenty of super license points. But what was your decision to end up there right now?
I think it's because of, basically, with the way Formula One is right now and the way the system is to get to Formula One, with the super license points, you're really forced to do F3 and F2 because they host the most amount of points. You know, if you finish top three in F2, you automatically have a super license. Whereas championships outside of Formula One, outside of the ladder system, I guess, that like Super Formula, like IndyCar, like other championships get a lot less points. And so I think people, a lot more people would go to Super Formula because of how good the car is. I mean, the car is very similar to Formula One. So in terms of preparing as a driver to drive in Formula One, it's a much better thing to be doing than Formula Two, and something that I've now learned that by doing it. So, but there's just not that many super license points available, so it's a big risk. But fortunately for me, because I have the super license from the last couple of years of F2, it means I don't have the pressure of going to Super Formula and having to finish in the top two or top, you know, win the championship to basically have a shot at F1. Obviously that's the goal, but that's why a lot less people, I would say, go and do it because of that reason, basically. So, and for us, because I had the super license, it was like, rather than doing a third season of F2, I'm not going to learn anything really doing that. And with the way Formula 2 is right now, it's really hard to get the right shot, I guess, to be fighting for a championship. So it was a perfect opportunity to go to Japan and drive a faster car with a team that's closer to Formula One working level.
I don't get to see much of Super Formula, and I'm intrigued by it. You know, being in
It's a
Japan,
fast car.
yeah, it's clearly a fast car, and clearly respected with the you know, not as many super license points as Formula Two, but Liam, talk about the difference and what's it like in Super Formula and being in Japan like that.
So, I mean, first of all, the competition is quite high, especially because the guys there have done a lot of seasons. You know, they're really, really experienced drivers. My teammate has done, I think, more than 10 seasons now of Super Formula. So, yeah, really, really experienced. So they just don't make mistakes, especially in qualifying. They're really good at delivering laps. They only drive on their circuits. So you have to be really, really accurate, and you can't afford to slip up. So, and then obviously the car is extremely fast. It's the downforce is just a lot higher. I think the aero is a lot higher than Formula 2 and what I've been racing in the past. But also the setup work, what we're changing is a lot, it relates a lot more to Formula 1 as well, with the setup work we're doing, the focus on aero and trying to be efficient with it. Ride height control, things like that. It's super, super fine margins, which I'm not used to, and it's also basically what you're working on in F1. So, and then as I said before, you got Toyota versus Honda, so you got two manufacturers, I guess, you know, pushing against each other. And it's quite cool to have something to sort of develop, be a part of developing a car that's not super, super fixed, as well, like I'm used to. So obviously Formula One will always be the pinnacle by a long shot, but this does feel a lot closer, and it does feel like I'm learning a lot more towards that.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the culture's hard. I don't know how your Japanese is coming on, but it is a baptism of fire, both in a very insular world. Japanese racing is, I mean, I mentioned New Zealand racing. Well, if you want a very inward community that does its own thing and has its own language and way of going racing, that takes a lot to get used to, I'm sure.
Yeah, exactly that. You know, a lot of people would, and I if Nick really, if Nick Cassidy hadn't gone there and done what he achieved in Super Formula and race in Japan, I probably wouldn't have really heard of it much, because it's not that big around the world. But then you go to the races in Japan, and you get, you know, grandstands are completely full with people, and you get like 50,000 people nearly at some of the races. And Super GT is even bigger than Super Formula, so it's just so big just in Japan. And it's very isolated to that, and I think they would like it to be more international, but it hasn't been something that I guess they've focused on so much. So, yeah, it's very isolated, and but it's really big in Japan.
Hey, we got a couple questions from YouTube. Jesse says, how would you compare driving a Super Formula car versus a current F1 car? And talk about the technical differences too.
So, Super Formula car very light. So, and it's the first thing you notice is the car is very, very lightweight, even compared to Formula One. So we're like 300, 400 kilograms lighter than Formula One. So, and you feel that especially in lower speed corners, you have a really fast sort of direction change. The car is very, very responsive. Probably the most responsive car that I've driven, even over Formula One. You know, because even though Formula One is so impressive, there's no way of getting around that weight. The downforce is very, very high. So in a high speed corner, in section, you know, the first sector of Suzuka, you have really high speed S's. Our you know, minimum speeds are probably quite close to Formula One through that section because of how high the downforce is. But then you get to a straight, and because you don't have the power that Formula One has, you basically don't, you don't accelerate super hard, and you sort of reach a terminal speed of around 300 kilometers an hour, and you just flatten out there because the car's not capable of pushing past it. We don't have DRS to reduce that drag either. So most of the time lost compared to Formula One is probably in that straight line phase, just because we don't have the power running, yeah, like 400 horsepower less than Formula One. So those are probably the main differences.
I've got another question from YouTube. Drew wants to know, how many hours a week do you spend in the simulator?
Ah.
So I have sort of two answers to that, because I have my own simulator at home that I mess around on and play a lot of games and yeah, I guess race with friends and do stuff on my own, and that's definitely a couple of days a week I'm driving on that. With Red Bull, it's once or twice a week, I would say, is Formula One work, where we spend a full day basically working on developing the Formula One car. So it's definitely, it's probably two times a week in Formula One, and then the other days I'll just be on my home sim.
And so did you get into your home sim a lot more during the pandemic? Like, we got to see Lando and Charles Leclerc and George Russell and all those guys. You know, they became, to me, it was fun just watching them because they were talking on their microphone during the races. It was really fun. Did you get into that during the pandemic?
For sure. I was, to be honest, it was one of the coolest, as unfortunate as the pandemic was, the online racing sort of had this, and I don't think it'll ever really happen again, but it just had this obviously huge growth because everyone was at home, and I was back in New Zealand. I flew back to New Zealand during the pandemic, and I had like a little Logitech bolted to an ironing board, and I ordered like
the secrets.
I did actually get a really cool simulator, but it took quite a few weeks to get there because of the
pandemic.
Yeah. Through most of it, I was just driving on this little setup. But the racing, we were on every single day, doing these online races, and every night you're racing against Van Gisbergen and McLaughlin. you're racing against Verstappen, Norris, all the guys basically, and F1 as well. Everyone was just on, and you'd all jump in these same leagues and race against each other, and it was so cool. And then we had series where it would be televised, and it would be like, you know, watching real racing, I guess.
Except you were racing an ironing like board.
And I was racing an ironing board, yeah, exactly.
It's like Connor Daly, he came on, he was talking about how his would fall apart in the middle of the race. Like his chair would break, or his steering wheel was mounted kind of haphazard. It was great.
Struggle sim racing, yeah.
A couple more questions. Joe wants to ask, which series is harder on your neck?
Ah.
Like Super Formula or Formula One, I guess.
Formula One would be harder on your neck. You slightly longer races, and I think the terminal speed, you know, especially braking in F1, you deal with a huge amount of force on the back of your neck. You know, the upper back, your back part of your neck deals with a lot of force there on braking, because you're braking from 350 kilometers an hour, and you're just stopping at an insane rate. So that's really where F1's pretty advanced on your neck. Laterally, it's would be a little bit more than Super Formula as well, but not so much. But I would say definitely Formula One is the pinnacle on that neck sort of stability.
Yeah. I got a question about your mate Yuki. How do you think he's getting on? You obviously knew each other. We saw on Drive to Survive how you helped him move out. I think you're mates. You know, I mean, to be honest, I haven't seen him up close, if you like, since his Toyota days. And he was he was coming in as a big I am, but he didn't change the world in New Zealand. But he's since gone on and had a few rocky times, but he's making it, right?
Yeah, exactly. I think he's done pretty well in Formula One, and I see a lot less of him now than I did. We used to pretty much live together. So yeah. I see a lot less of him now, but I think that's pretty normal. Once you reach F1, you know, it completely consumes your world. And for him, he's got a huge amount to focus on with what he's doing. So I see him a lot at the track. The last couple of races, I've actually been reserve and being with AlphaTauri. Most of the year I've been with Red Bull, and then we did a couple of races with AlphaTauri, so I could also spend time with both teams. And so I got to speak to him a lot more during Spa. But yeah, I definitely see a lot less of him now than I used to.
All right, guys, we need to take a quick break. And when we come back, I'm going to ask Liam about a drag race.
Well, ask him if he can stay, first of all. It looks as like he's about to take off.
Liam, you got a couple of minutes to stick through us to the break?
I got about 5 minutes.
There you go. All right, we're going to do a quick break. I'm going to ask you about this drag race. You're listening to Sunday Night with Speed City, back after this. Hey guys, we are very excited to welcome our new sponsor, Allstop Brewery, to Speed City. These guys make a fantastic beer, and I'm going to let Jonathan talk about it, but I'm going to tell you about it. When I tasted it, I am not a big beer aficionado. I like a nice cold beer, but I'm always worried about a craft beer or a new beer that it's going to have a funky taste, especially aftertaste. This beer was fantastic. I have absolutely no qualms at all that this is my new favorite beer. But Jonathan, you know why, what makes it so special, the water and the recipe?
Well, yeah, I mean, these guys have done their research and do it right. And they've even imported the right water to do it right. I mean, I tell you, this Allstadt beer, fantastic. And most Europeans are snobs about their beer. And I'm definitely one of those. Because
you're definitely a snob?
Yes, okay. About my beer.
Okay.
because there's no question, carbonation has always been my issue here in the States. It's overcarbonated. And our lagers, our pilsners and lagers in Europe, especially German ones, are not that heavily carbonated. And that's a key thing. And that's the first thing that hit me was just how well they've done the beer. It's based out of Fredericksburg. It's got a great tie-in because obviously Fredericksburg, a German town, and now they've got a Texas German beer, and it's cracking.
Yeah, and the facility out there, it's amazing. They've really done it right. It's really fantastic. So check it out. You can get it at all the local HEBs and everything else, right?
Yep. It's all around Texas. You can get it. They sell it in on the shelf there as a Texas beer. But I'll tell you what, you're right back in Germany when you drink it.
And it's Allstadt Beer, Allstadt Beer.com. Allstadt Beer, Allstadt Beer.com.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Hello to everyone. This is Gunther Steiner. This is Speed City.
Welcome back to the fastest hour in radio. Speed City.
All right, welcome back. We got Liam Lawson with us, Red Bull
awesome
F1
Lawson.
Reserve driver. And I know you just got a little bit of time left, Liam, but I wanted to ask you, I was actually just watching my usual brainless car shows, and one of my favorites is the CarWow Matt Watson drag races. And I look up, and there you are on that video racing in a Red Bull, the Sebastian Vettel's 2012 RB8, racing against a Rimac Nevera. And my favorite car of now, right now, currently, the McMurtry Spearling.
Ooh.
What a crazy race. And I hate to admit this, I hate to bring it up, but you lost the drag race, didn't
what?
You? Yeah, it was crazy.
Yeah, I lost by a lot.
I thought he was going to come up with some racing driver, you know, like excuse, because racing drivers never admit that sort of stuff.
Well, I haven't got that far yet. The excuse is about to come out.
Oh, okay,
now.
Good.
basically, I'm versing, two electric cars. One of them has got 2,000 horsepower, and the other one has, which is the McMurtry Spearling, has a fan that obviously sucks it to the ground. It doesn't create drag unbelievably. So it has this, from 0 kilometers an hour, it has about two tons of downforce, I guess, or suction to the ground.
shoot.
So it launches at an unbelievable speed. You know, 0 to 100 is 1.4 seconds.
Oh my gosh, that'll pull your eyeballs out.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. So, and because it has this wicked downforce, whereas obviously I'm driving a Formula One car, which has no downforce at 0 kilometers an hour. And then the faster I get, the more I'm being dragged and slowed down. So,
this is a good excuse. I like it.
We had a big headwind as well. It was like a really gusty day.
Oh, headwind. Oh, yeah.
We had a high downforce on the car as well.
Do you have a stomach ache too?
But you're very lightweight. Did you have an extra meal or anything?
Yeah, I ate quite a lot that morning. I remember. So, we lost by a lot, but it was just cool to see those cars, to be honest, and to do the race, and for me to drive that car.
Yeah,
it's honestly an emotional thing for me to do it, because the first time I drove it was Goodwood a couple of years ago, and it's a car that I grew up watching. You know, those were the years that I was just getting into F1 in 2010 when Red won the first championship. I was 8 years old.
Oh wow!
Just a fanatic on, you know, learning on Formula One. So yeah, it was very special to do.
Yeah, I'll bet.
Emotional. Yeah.
Well, look, listen, I'm so glad you came on the show, because you're one of those guys that everybody keeps hearing about but probably doesn't know much about in terms of Formula One. I'm talking about our fans generally tune in to watch Formula One, and they'll have heard, as mentioned, your name along with the other Red Bull Juniors. But it's great to get an insight in what you're doing. Tell us a little bit about your social, where you're going. You said you're going to Japan on Tuesday, or you're off home. Well, you're off back to Japan to race, I guess.
Exactly. So I have an extremely busy year with travel because of the cross between Formula One and Super Formula. So I'm still based in Milton Keynes, living next to Red Bull Racing.
You lucky man. How are you going with the roundabouts?
Yeah, it's the roundabouts are good, but that's really the only good part about it.
Yep, you summed it up.
Exactly. So, but obviously I traveled to Japan a lot for the races, and then I traveled to the Formula One races as well. So, on Tuesday I leave for Japan. We race this weekend in Motegi, next weekend in Motegi.
Oh, that's a good circuit.
And then I'm flying from there to the Dutch Grand Prix, for basically the next race back after summer break. So it's about to get pretty hectic the second half of the year.
Yeah.
You know, just as a 1500 meter rule, you must be, I know you're in the middle of it all, and we've asked you some pretty tough questions, but it must be so exciting to be part of Red Bull in this era.
It is, yeah, because obviously the team is in an unbelievable situation where they're just super dominant, and everything that we're sort of developing and doing with the car is just working, and the more we change and understand about the car, and the more the team does, they just keep finding time, and the closer everybody gets, the further we also extend. You know, it's crazy. So obviously the team is fully aware that you can only be dominant for so long, and that's why the work is as it's always been. Nobody's relaxing off, even because the car is good. That, you know, the work ethic is still 100% there to keep moving forward, and trying to keep this, I guess, you know, streak as long as we can. And for me, it's exciting, but it's extremely anxious at the same time, because I'm obviously at the closest point I've ever been. I'd basically just waiting to see what happens.
Well, give us your social, and let everybody know where they can find you and follow you, whether it be Super Formula or AlphaTauri and Red Bull.
Really the only social media is probably Instagram, which is just Liam Lawson 30. I have other social media platforms, but I don't really run them.
Don't have time for it.
You kind of put me on the spot there, but
that's cool. That's cool.
That's probably just the Instagram, yeah.
All right, that's cool.
Liam Lawson, thank you very much, and good luck
with
Super Formula and your career moving to Formula One.
By the way, I've got bad news for you. Looks like you're going to get Callum Hedge, whether you like it or not, next year, so you better finish off Japan while you can, because he's coming.
I know he is, and I'm excited for him. It's going to be a big step. Obviously, he's to finish out his championship, but he's doing an unbelievable job so far, so it's looking good, but yeah, it'll be cool for him.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it. And go well. We'll see you at the Dutch Grand Prix.
See you then. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, man. Have a good holiday.
What a great kid, man.
Awesome. Awesome guy.
21 years old.
I know. World at his feet. I was there when he signed his Red Bull contract. February 11th.
Were you?
2018. Yes, because that's his birthday. That was his 18th birthday.
Was it at Toyota?
Yeah.
Okay.
They signed him there and then after winning the championship. Pretty cool.
Yeah, because I saw that he did Macau, too. Did you... commentate?
Let me see. I did.
I was just thinking the only time you weren't there was during the pandemic.
Yeah, so. But that he didn't. There was no F3 during the pandemic.
Oh, that's right.
So he didn't
right.
do it then. Yeah. Huh. So yeah, I was there when he was there. Yeah, it's kind of cool.
Yeah, and I know
that would have been my last year. Yeah.
Yeah, and I know that he couldn't answer really because he's a Red Bull driver.
Yeah, right? It's a tough question to ask, and you don't want to get too far into it, but because like I said, you know, what he says in the public, and you know, quiet, you know, listening ears. I thought he was very professional. He's bound to have his own opinions, but I think what he said was both interesting and right. He basically admitted that he is happy that he didn't get thrown in mid-season, and he knows.
I mean, he could easily win this thing at Super Formula this year.
We've seen in Drive to Survive. You know, we've seen ourselves with Medlin, Jack Crawford, another Red Bull Junior.
Yep.
What did Marco say? He needs to. This is not about Lawson. He was talking about Jack.
Yeah.
He needed to improve, and we saw it firsthand because Medlin said, "What were you saying to Jack?" And he said, "Well, he's got to improve. He's got to start winning."
Yeah.
And so he's under the same cosh. And while we all hear that Liam obviously is performing, he's second in the championship in a very tough championship, there's no mercy here at Red Bull. And you only need to look at Montoya. Fittipaldi just won in F2. There's Jack Crawford. I mean, there is something like 8 to 10 Red Bull juniors that he's up against.
Mm-hmm.
And then Ricciardo gets pushed in, and actually it might turn out, I think reading between the lines, I think this move by AlphaTauri not to bring him in alongside Yuki is actually a good one, because they need to move that team forward. And he didn't want to have that responsibility of learning to be an F1 driver and the responsibility of effectively, you know, moving all ships upward.
Yeah, and it's such a tough thing to do that, come in the middle of the season like that. You know, you want that traditional prep before the season, you know, to learn about the systems as much as you can.
Yeah.
I know he's, you know, going to the races now, but also think about, and you're thinking about Tsunoda, from the team standpoint, they wanted to measure him. They really...
Yes, they did, yeah.
And they couldn't really do that with De Vries because they didn't know where De Vries was, because he came in, you know, basically. I mean, he was a rookie, even though he was a 26-year-old rookie. So Ricciardo there, they at least can say over these next few races that they're measuring Yuki Tsunoda against somewhat of a known entity. You know, I know that Ricciardo struggled, but still, they're measuring against somebody who's won 8 races, Ricciardo.
Yeah, and Ricciardo's path, if you will, is only one way. It is to replace Perez or not replace Perez, but that's how they're looking at this. And at which point, that would be obvious to bring Liam in or whoever they feel is the better fit. But Liam is first in line at the moment, and he would therefore either join Yuki, which would be interesting. Like you said, he almost lived together. They're mates. Not that that has anything to do with anything in Formula One. But if Yuki's not pushing it, it might be an easier path once Ricciardo is still 33, 34. I mean, he's not around forever. This whole move with De Vries might have helped him.
Yeah, and you don't know what could happen. What happens if, you know,
Liam
Lawson could end up, there's no telling where he could end up.
Of course.
He could end up next to Max Verstappen.
He could end up with Colton Herta at Andretti Global.
Well, we have no idea that's true. But he is definitely one to watch, and I think we're lucky to get him.
Thank goodness it's fantastic.
Your relationship through the Toyota Racing Series.
Yeah,
give them a plug. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
But, let's see. What else, Johnny Green?
Well, we got to talk Alpine. We've got to.
Okay.
Did you hear that Helmut, one of the stories I put in was Helmut Marko saying Andretti needs to buy Alpine. He basically what I said what I said last week. And I feel much better now he said it.
Yeah.
But it is an obvious thing to say.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. The fact that he said it, though, I mean, we don't know what's going on right now with Andretti. All that we know is that every time anybody asks Michael the question, what's going on, he says, we are still proceeding as if we have a team.
Yeah.
You know, they've hired people, they're moving forward, they're doing things. I don't know what they're doing exactly, but, you know, we don't know what's going on.
Well,
I
can sum it up.
I expect an announcement, you know?
I can sum it up. Alpine are at sixes and sevens and don't know where they are.
Well, yeah.
They don't know who's in charge. They don't know what they're doing. They fired everybody that makes any sense. And Andretti goes from strength to strength globally, and it's why it's called Andretti Global. And if they're not winning in Indy, they're winning in Extreme. If they're not winning in Extreme, they're winning in Supercar. You know what I mean? They're pretty handy. Hunter McElroy, by the way, another Kiwi winning for Andretti Autosport in Indy Lights last weekend.
You talked all about how crazy the number of drivers, but tell everybody how the size of New Zealand.
New Zealand's ridiculous. There's more sheep than there are people.
Well, that doesn't give us...
No, that doesn't give you much of a perspective. That was my geography lesson. New Zealand, a country of 4 million people and 60 million sheep. I was like, God, is that what they teach you at high school?
So 4 million people.
Well, it's about 6 now. I went to high school back in the early days.
It's not much bigger than Houston or Chicago or whatever.
No. Yeah, and in distance, I would say it's Houston to Dallas in terms of end-to-end. You know, I mean, it's, you know, you're not talking a great distance. You can do it in a day.
It's insane.
It's insane that they've produced so many great athletes, not just Formula, you know, not just car racing. I mean, car racing is where they, you know, to the car racing fan are outstanding, you know, but they're outstanding in rowing, in soccer, in, you know, so many other sports for such a tiny country. It's pretty incredible.
Mm. Hey, I saw you put in a story in here, and I'm smiling because I know this is near and dear to your heart.
Which one's this?
F1 considers DRS banned.
Do you see I sneaked that in?
You didn't sneak it in. I'm surprised you didn't put it in bold and all caps.
I was going to.
But yeah, well, I know you've been, the reason I've been saying all that, because you've been complaining about DRS.
Well, and I think it's a step in the right direction, but I don't think it's a step far enough. I think
you got to start somewhere.
Well, here's my thing. So DRS was brought in when we couldn't overtake. This new era of downforce means that the cars can run, as planned by Braun, the cars can run closer together. We've seen it. We've seen more overtaking. And yet, we've also seen people fighting to not be overtaken in a DRS zone or to wait for an overtake. You know, and so now it's getting kind of pointless because you can only, if you overtake somebody in the DRS zone and it's a long enough DRS zone, they're going to re-overtake you the next DRS zone. So it's after you, sir. So I just think that it should go to an Indy rule. And I think this is a step in the right direction, banning it for qualifying because that makes sense because you don't need it.
Right.
And actually controlling it if you still want it. I'd get rid of it completely because I think you've changed the cars enough.
Well, what if we went to the idea that I started talking about, I guess, 2 weeks ago, where we go to something like Indy, where you have a finite amount, like push to pass. But that's something you could easily just try.
I agree.
Just turn it. Just say, all right, you get X number of seconds or X number of sessions, you know, button push.
And it would be great for watching Perez, for example, who'd saved his DRS and in the last 10 laps was using it to scythe his way through the field, for example. Yeah. Or Verstappen, who used it right at the start and has now got a 7-second lead, but the others are catching. Mm. It would help the drama of what we as pundits do, commentate, etc., on it, because I think it would add a little drama to it. Not that Formula One needs drama.
All right, well, let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we got some more Formula One stories and a little IndyCar and maybe a little NASCAR. Listen to Sunday Night with Speed City back after this.
Motivation USA, catering to the sport bike enthusiast looking for truly unique parts and accessories. Stand out from the crowd. Motivation is the exclusive North American distributor for SC Project MotoGP inspired exhausts and the largest Rizoma retailer in the United States. Get the best parts from around the world at the best prices with fast shipping and a knowledgeable staff ready to help. Shop online 24/7 at MotivationUSA.com. That's MotivationUSA.com.
If you want want to know where the path to Formula One and Indy begins, it's three simple letters. VRD. VRD Racing of Atlanta, Georgia are dedicated to nurturing young, single-seater drivers on their quest to the pinnacle of motorsport. Having just wrapped up the team's championship title in 2021 in the F4 US Championship, they also have programs in FR Americas, the all-new USF Juniors, and the Road to Indy. VRD is the perfect environment for success. To join the team, drop them a DM on Instagram at velocity_RD.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
We all belong outside. We're drawn to nature. Whether it's the recorded sounds of the ocean we doze off to, or the succulents that adorn our homes, nature makes all of our lives, well, better. Despite all this, we often go about our busy lives removed from it. But the outdoors is closer than we realize. With AllTrails, you can discover trails nearby and explore confidently. With offline maps and on-trail navigation, download the free app today and make the most of your summer with AllTrails.
Hi, this is Max Verstappen, and you're listening to Speed City.
Welcome back to the fastest hour in radio, Speed City.
Thank you, Max Verstappen. During the break, I was talking about going to the Porsche Experience Center, they call it, in Atlanta. And it's been there a while, but they have a racetrack there, and they've got a museum, a little museum, and they've got, and they also had a restaurant. And when I'm stuck in Atlanta waiting on a flight, and I have like 5 hours to burn, and my wife looks at me and she goes, "Well, there's that Porsche Center over there." And I went,
wow.
Oh my gosh.
Wow.
What a fantastic idea. She thought of it before I did. So we made dinner reservations at their little restaurant. We went over there, but it was really cool. They've got a museum. They've got all the latest cars.
I hope you check your keys at security and your wallet, because that's something your wife doesn't want to take you there.
Well,
is that wallet with you?
So we went into the little gift shop. And I was walking around, and I look up on the top shelf. I didn't take a picture of that. They're showing some pictures on YouTube. But I saw this Gucci-looking purse, and my wife was on the other side of the shelf. So I just I reach up and pick it up. It's on the very top shelf.
Oh, well, you're tall.
So, Mr. Longarms, I pick it up, and I look at the price. And I literally, my eyeballs just popped out. It was a $9,000 purse. But
she did take you to the Porsche Experience. The least you could do is buy her a bag.
Well, I was just thinking, I knew it was going to be ridiculous, right? But I thought, I'll just at least look. But yeah, I took some videos that were shown on YouTube right now. It's right by the airport, and you actually see planes.
I did not
landing.
Know that was there.
Yep.
That's cool.
And then while I was there, the storm hit, and the rain just started pouring down. And then the lightning came, and then the power went out. So we had to cancel our dinner plans.
Word.
They shut the whole thing down. They just said, so we had to cancel our dinner plans and go eat in the airport. But
there you go.
But yeah, it was a very cool experience to go see the Porsche Experience Center. And you can actually take delivery of your car there too. So
I shall be seeing a lot of Porsches next weekend. I'm doing the Monterey reunion.
I am so jealous. I may call you tomorrow or the next day and say, hey, I'm coming.
Hey, I've got a. There's a hot seat in the commentary booth.
Is there a microphone there? Yeah, I'll come with you.
Don't worry.
All right, what do you want to talk about, Johnny? On YouTube, a couple people talking about.
Yeah, let's get some questions from
Drew.
Me.
Says like he was talking about. We're talking about New Zealand. He said like PTP in IndyCar.
Yeah,
Paul Tracy.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yep. Absolutely. And what about Scott Dixon?
Oh, I know, the GOAT.
How crazy is that?
You know, it's funny. When that spin happened, I thought to myself, it's not over, because that's the kind of encouragement, that's the kind of belief you have in the GOAT, is that it doesn't matter what they throw at Dixon. He's metronomic in his approach. I did not think he was out of that race. And again, he proved me right. He's amazing.
Just how long can he go? I mean, what was the stat that I saw about him winning races? I'm going to look that up. But I mean, it's just amazing. How old is Scott now?
He's won he's won in every 19 of his seasons.
That's what it was.
Which is incredible in longevity. It's not like he had a rookie season and then took 5 years to ease his way in and then became good. No, he's been winning from the get-go. And he came, funnily enough, his and Liam's story is very similar. Started off in the junior formulas back in, Formula First and Formula Ford, and then on through. And now Marcus Armstrong's following him, McLaughlin's followed him, and many more. McElroy is another one. So, too wild.
I just emailed our producer a photo that was passed around. I think it started on Instagram under IndyCar memes. And the photo, Jonathan, you won't be able to see it unless
I'll go back to my. No, I can see it.
Yeah, but the caption is: "It's the year 2045. Scott Dixon just secured his 13th IndyCar championship and claims he won't stop till his 20th. And it's somehow one of those pieces of software that ages you, and that show him aged. I thought it was pretty hilarious.
Have you seen that the F1 intro with where all the drivers are women?
No, I have.
That's
not.
Pretty funny. It's the opening titles, the Sky Sports opening titles, but they've morphed them
into women,
which is interesting because the cutest is Yuki Tsunoda, which is weird. in my opinion, and then there's another one where all of the drivers basically have a sulky look on the face, and it just when you get all the way to the end and Verstappen's like, it's pretty funny. AI.
So back to IndyCar. So Alex Palou, the gap's down to 100 points, 101.
Yeah.
But I say down to, it's still
That's a healthy lead. They could have done with Palou not finishing, or Skip Dixon could have done with that, and so were the others chasing him. But what an interesting time for Palou. I'll tell you what, he's got some fortitude mentally, because he's not only racing at the top of his game, he's fired his Monaco-based company. He's reneged on a McLaren contract for 2024, which is pretty darned amazing. And he's done that for two reasons. McLaren aren't winning. Ganassi is winning, and they did with Scott yesterday. He's leading the title chase. I think he's happy where he is. But the fact that he's fired his management company, or at least they've parted ways with him because he literally reneged on a contract they put together for him. And Zach Brown, who I'll be seeing next weekend, is not a man to trifle with.
He's not. That's right. Zach's going to be driving out there.
He's going to be driving Formula One cars. Yeah, he's driving Williams. Yeah.
He tweeted out the other day he was going to be driving multiple cars.
Yeah, he will be. Yeah. He has quite a collection. He drives his own cars. And he has a Formula One car. He has a Williams Formula One car. I don't know if he has a McLaren Formula One car, but I'm sure he will be driving some sort of McLaren over the weekend. It's the 60th anniversary of McLaren this year, so that's exciting. But he loves his historic
race. And I'm going through it in my head. What do I have next weekend? I swear I've got something. I better ask my wife.
California,
here I want to go to that. Last year I wanted to go to that, and I just couldn't make it work. I have too many balls in the air, Mr. Green.
Oh, well. You got to hit a few. Swat a few. So what have you got in your stories? MoneyGram? Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, MoneyGram. I thought that was interesting just because it was on motorsport.com.
I got a question for both you and our audience. Is it too easy to say, Bonotto, Alpine? You know, it just seems like there's not much very creative about that. There must be some talent that is ready to shine that isn't Bonotto and who comes in under a cloud anyway of just being thrown out of one of the top teams.
Yeah.
I don't think that's going to help. I don't think that's going to help Alpine to put in.
Who?
I don't know. I don't know enough about. I tell you who knows. Dave O'Neill.
That's true.
You know, I don't know enough about the up and coming engineers. I mean, look at James
Vowles. Dave O'Neill.
Well, there you go, Dave O'Neill. But James Vowles, I think, was a great move from Mercedes.
Yes, good.
Look at who is at Mercedes and who, you know, the James Allisons of this world that have been there for a while, you know, and offer a lot. See who's, you know, Mike Cracker at Aston Martin is doing a cracking job.
Mm, nicely played. I'm just checking YouTube, see if anybody had any thoughts here, because I don't know enough. I don't know.
Eric Bouillet, another Frenchman.
Well, you know, again, tainted.
Yes.
The fact that he was, been there, done that, tried it, didn't work. But you know how that's just like coaches in college football here and NFL here. They come and go, and sometimes they land.
How about a college coach? Well, sort of Ted Lasso for Formula One. Wouldn't that be interesting?
I think Alpine's in enough disarray.
Enough trouble.
They need
Ted Lasso.
They need somebody to come in and really write that ship. It's crazy. Drew on YouTube says, I like the Andretti to Alpine idea.
Well, they've already got the Renault contract. It really is a simple fit. I mean, no word of a lie. Marco's not out of school here at all. And I think that there is, I mean, I read another interesting story about what they were saying in that story, Andretti saga outcome expected in September. If you read that story, which by the way is on GrandPrix.com, a great source, Joe Sayed.
I was going to say, that's Joe's, isn't it? Joe Sayed?
Yeah, Joe Sayed. And why I like getting stories from him is that if you want something a little bit left field or something that's on the back burner that isn't maybe a headline in a racer or an autosport, Grand Prix does a good job of that. And in there, he's quoted as saying, the FIA, and Sullivan says, we can't break our own rules. We have said there is enough room or there is credence. What's the word? There is a rule that there can be as many as 12 teams.
Yeah.
So you can't say, well, the current teams don't want it, so we're not going to do that. That you just can't run a business that way.
Yeah, and they're, you know, it's at the peak and all that, but you know, we've seen motorsports many times wax and wane in popularity.
Well,
let's get an Andretti and a Cadillac in here right now.
And look at what, I mean, people's minds are, remember when 2012, do you remember when Formula One started here in Austin? There was Marussia, there was Caterham, there was HRT, Caterham. There was Virgin. America was on the edge of bringing its own team in, but it never happened. So Formula One, McLaren in the next 10, you know, over that period, almost fell apart. Williams almost went into receivership. So I just find it very odd that now suddenly, oh, we're fine. We've got all our franchises. We don't need any more help.
Mm, yeah. And, you know, speaking of all those, the last one was Haas. And that story you were talking about was MoneyGram. They were talking about MoneyGram in this Motorsport.com article.
And it nearly pulled out of Formula One before the Concours Grand
Prix. Right. But they talked about, they said exactly what I've been saying about MoneyGram. They're saying it's easy to get MoneyGram confused with a wave of crypto or investment companies that come to one. But they are not that. Mm. They are a very long-established money transfer business. And they're an American company. They've been around for a long time. It's a great partner for Haas. My point about all that is that Haas needs to do something with it now because it is disappointing right now with Haas and they need to step it up.
Hey, there was one story in there about Alfa Romeo might take their brand name to Haas.
Hmm. Okay.
After the Audi comes in.
Yeah, yeah. Interesting. You talk about GrandPrix.com with Joe Sayard. I have one that I like and it's another one of your buddies, Keith Collentine.
Yes.
Racefans.com. Yep. Net, I think it is.
Yes. Yeah.
That's another good
site. He's a good boy. Yeah.
That's another good site about that has, you know, off the beaten path a little bit like that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another good one. That's, I always.
And by the way, there's quite a few junior sites out there now starting to proliferate a little bit better. I'm getting into it. Obviously, the juniors doing a bit of F3 and F4 or FR and F4. And so I've come across quite a few sites now that are, you know, young guns and so on. And people like Lawson get interviewed and. It's interesting.
Yeah, there's that one Twitter called F1 Feeder Series.
Yes. Yep.
Follow those guys.
Yeah. And USOpenWheel .com.
Yeah. Joe of Oyster Bay says, would Haas sell? They've already been approached.
Yes.
Because Michael said he's knocked on every single door. Well, we know that. But back the first time that, you know, that the last year when Andretti first started all this, he talked about Haas. But, you know, right now, You know, I think
you mean would they sell to Andretti?
Yeah.
Hmm. Because they've already gone down that road.
Right. They've
they?
Already asked him, and they said no at that point. But you know, I guess everything's got a price. But
yeah.
But Haas is enjoying this popularity for his company probably right now.
Yeah, I don't know.
Oh, we're out of time, dude. We are down to 30 seconds.
I don't think, yeah, I think Haas has voted with his feet. I think they'll stay for now, but will they sell? He's a businessman.
Yeah. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. Thanks for tuning in on YouTube and on the
radio.
Thanks,
Liam Lawson.
Thanks to Liam Lawson. That was fantastic. No telling who we'll have for you next week, so tune in for next Sunday night. Thanks, everybody.
Happy
to see you soon.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
We all belong outside. We're drawn to nature. Whether it's the recorded sounds of the ocean we doze off to, or the succulents that adorn our homes, nature makes all of our lives, well, better. Despite all this, we often go about our busy lives removed from it. But the outdoors is closer than we realize. With AllTrails, you can discover trails nearby and explore confidently. With offline maps and on-trail navigation, download the free app today and make the most of your summer with AllTrails.